Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Chris Terracone. Season 8 of Jury Duty explores the trial of Alex Murdoch, a member of one of the most powerful families in South Carolina, who is accused of murdering his son Paul and his wife Maggie, with the purpose of covering up a multitude of alleged crimes, including fraud and homicide. In our last episode, we concluded our look at the state's direct examination of forensic pathologist Dr. Alan Reamer. In this installment, we begin our look at day 15 of the trial with the defense's cross-examination of Dr. Reamer. That's all coming up right after the break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It is the morning of February 14th, 2023, day 15 of the trial of Alex Murdoch. We concluded our last episode with the culmination of Creighton Waters' direct examination of SLED forensic pathologist Dr. Alan Reamer. As we begin this installment, Judge Clifton Newman gavels in the session, and defense attorney Dick Harpootlian rises to begin his cross-examination of the witness.
Good morning, Dr. Reamer.
Good morning.
Let me at the outset say, we're going to be described yesterday as you went through direct. We saw some very graphic images, and I apologize, but we're going to have to do that again today.
Again, these images are only visible to the litigants, the witness, the judge, and the trial's jury.
You, of course, this is what you see every day, but I'm sure you understand how other people may, especially people related to the deceased, might react to that.
Of course.
First of all, let's talk about Maggie for just a minute. Were you shown photographs of the back of her thigh that were taken at the scene?
No.
The back of her calf, I'm sorry.
I did not.
Defense attorney Dick Harpootlian sorts through several photographs. He eventually finds the image that he is seeking and hands it to Dr. Reamer.
Have you seen that photograph
before? No, I have not.
Okay. I noticed in your autopsy report, you remark that there is a bruise on the back of the leg in that similar position, correct?
Oh, I don't recall. Can
Could I? Could you look, please? Thank you.
Dr. Reamer looks through her notes before responding.
I don't see in my report where I'm remarked of a bruise on the left leg.
Okay, so was there a bruise on the right leg?
I don't have any, I didn't make any comment about that in my report.
So no one asked you to opine about any issue on the back of her left calf?
No, and I did not observe that at autopsy.
And by the time it got to autopsy, had her body been washed or?
No.
Okay, but if this is mud, you wouldn't necessarily expect to see it.
It could have fallen off, correct.
Correct. You were not asked to opine about whether this was a whether there was bruising on the back of the left calf, which would have been consistent with somebody stepping on her calf.
No, I was not asked about that.
Okay. And you were not shown this photo?
Correct.
Okay. And just to deal with Maggie a little bit further, you testified yesterday that the shots were consistent, I think, with someone circling her?
Well, I didn't actually use that term. I said that she was shot from at one point from behind her and at one point from above her. So that could mean that there was a. It could mean that she was turning before she got the first one and then fell, because she could have also been moving.
Well,
so.
So we know that the shooter was moving because some wounds have stippling, stippling and soot. Am I saying that correctly?
Well, there was no soot, but just
what we have. What would soot indicate?
Soot is a contact wound.
Okay.
So she had stippling, which is not quite contact. It's further back.
3 to 4 feet?
Well, usually, we don't see it more than 3 feet away.
Okay.
So it's somewhere within 3 feet.
Okay. And so she may have been turning. The shooter may have been moving straight on. I mean, that's as good an explanation for what you saw as somebody circling her, correct?
Yes. I mean, from my perspective, based on the autopsy, that is a reasonable explanation.
Of course. So the reasonable explanation is she's moving, trying to perhaps avoid being shot, turning around, trying to run, whatever, right?
Well, she could be turning around after getting the initial shots.
Right.
And then if the shooter was still stationary, then she could have gotten that one. So it doesn't imply that she could have been moving, not just the shooter.
Okay. And the ones without stippling was for more than the barrel of the gun would have been more than 4 feet away.
Well, you know, it's kind of a rough estimate, but I would say, you know, it would be more than 3 feet, possibly more than that.
And that would be the barrel, the end of the barrel of the gun.
That's right, because that's where the gunpowder starts coming out.
That doesn't mean the shooter was 3 feet away.
Absolutely not, just the barrel of the gun.
Right. And you testified about why there was a wound that would appear to be parallel to her, and your indication is shot that would have hit her kidney or pancreas or whatever, she might have been bent over.
No. The injury to the pancreas and kidney was on the right side of the abdomen,
right,
and that went from front to back and exited the left back. The one that was kind of along parallel to her body was on the left side of the body going.
As Dr. Reamer continues her testimony, Alex Murdoch appears to shake and weep.
So why did you testify that one of the shots would have been so painful she would have bent over? What was that consistent?
Yeah, that was the one to the right side of the abdomen. And the reason I believe it's probable or, you know, quite likely that that would have caused her to bend over is because a subsequent shot was going sort of upward in the body. And it's hard to imagine you know, that wound going upward and then into the head unless she was bent over. So it's a possible explanation of how she was in a position to actually get that.
So she bent over and it would go upwards. Why?
Because if somebody is standing behind her and there's no close range here, but at least a few feet away.
So she got shot. Ben turns around, bends over, and then you're saying...
She could have turned around or not turned around. Or I don't know if she turned around or the shooter's moving.
Okay. Did anybody ask you to look at the pattern of ejected shells from the blackout?
I wasn't asked to look at those.
Okay. So your conjecture, opinion, is based on purely the wounds and trying to figure out how that happened.
Yes. So I do the autopsy. I have everything to do with the body. And at the time, I never heard anything about, I composed my autopsy reports
right,
without any reference to the scene.
Okay.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Defense Attorney Dick Harpootlian continues his cross-examination of Dr. Reamer by asking the witness about her analysis of Paul Murdoch's wounds.
Okay. So let me move along to Paul for the moment, okay? And you indicate that the first shot would have been buckshot to the chest.
I believe that that was most likely the first shot.
Well, because the second shot is basically executes him.
He would have fallen to the ground.
Right. And clearly he was upright when that first shot was made.
Yes.
Okay. And it goes in his chest. And would he have to be turned diagonally to the shooter for it to come out his left armpit?
No, not necessarily.
Well, if he shot straight on with that buckshot, and if that was a contact wound or...
No, it's a close range.
Close range. Closer than 3 feet.
Yes.
Okay. Can't estimate how far.
I can't. You'd have to test fire.
Okay. So the chest shot, if it's straight on, wouldn't it just go right through his lungs and his heart?
Yes.
Okay.
So this was shot at an angle across. So that might indicate that his body was positioned perpendicular to the shooter. Now, the shooter could also shoot from the side, doesn't necessarily shoot from the front. So we can't be 100% sure about this.
If you're the shooter, and I'm Paul, and you shoot me with that buckshot, if I'm faced to the side, would the results be consistent with your autopsy examination?
Yes.
Okay. And we know that some of those pellets, you think his arm was down by his side?
I feel confident about that.
Okay. And the reason for that is there are pellet holes in his arm, right?
No, that's not the reason. The reason is because there's bruising around the exit wounds. They're kind of shored exits. And then we have corresponding bruising on the underside of the arm. So it indicates that they were in close proximity at the time the pellets exited and then reentered. Because if there was a distance, we wouldn't have the bruising around those wounds.
Okay. And do the pellets go through his arm?
Yeah, there are pellets that exited through the arm.
And so there's little pellet holes on his arm exiting.
Yes.
Did you see a corresponding entrance wound with the pellets?
Yes, the entrance pellet wounds were on the inside of the arm.
Right, and then they go out, and I think they struck things after that, as far as you know.
I don't know what happened to them after they left the body.
So either the shooter is to his right.
Yes.
Shooting across.
Yes.
Okay, and you think that shooter would have been closer than 3 feet, but you can't say how close.
Right. He could have been to his right, or Paul may have turned his body in that perpendicular manner
But either way, there would have been almost immediate bleeding. Well, not a fatal wound. There would have been immediate bleeding from that wound, correct?
There would have been bleeding. It's hard to say how much, but certainly I would expect some bleeding.
But if there were footprints found halfway into that feed room, those are Paul's footprints, would that indicate to you that he had stepped in his own blood?
Oh, that's certainly possible.
Okay. Not inconsistent with what you have.
Correct.
And that second shot would have come... As I understand it, Mr. Barber, can you take your coat off and come here, please? I hate to do this to him, but I can't really do it to myself.
Dick Harpootlian guides fellow defense attorney Philip Barber to stand in front of the jury, and then directs Dr. Reamer to use Barber's body to demonstrate the path that the gunshots traveled through Paul Murdoch's body.
Okay, so we've already talked about this woman, which goes in right about here. Show the jury where the wound went in.
Yeah, it was like between the sternum and the left nipple. So kind of right over there.
Right over there. And Mr. Barber's a little bit taller. He was, I think, 5.
Yeah, I measured his height. I don't recall.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But I believe Mr. Barber's a little bit taller than he was. But so the entrance wound is here and is consistent with him being so shot would have gone... Like this?
Yes. That's approximately correct. And it has a slightly front to back.
Slightly front to back.
Right. But mostly it's right to left.
Okay.
His right to left.
How about raise your left arm for me, please? So, and his arm was not raised, but I want to point out, it comes out. We're going to see some pictures in a minute. So it would have come out right under his arm.
Yes, we do have the exit pellet wounds there.
And we also have wadding, do we not?
Yeah, we have wadding stuck in the underside of his left arm.
And then it goes through his arm.
Yes.
Still coming front to back.
Well, it's from, it's left to right, but there is a slight front to back because we have some exit wounds on the back.
Okay, so if I told you this is a narrow room,
okay.
Have you seen any crime scene photos?
From here? No.
From?
Oh, yeah, from this case. Crime scene photos in my career, yes.
In this case?
I really didn't. I may have been shown a very small photo, like a couple of weeks ahead of trial, but I didn't form any opinions based on.
If I told you that small room, the gap between some stacks of dog food here and the wall and a little thing over here is maybe 3 to 4 feet, and this buckshot goes through the back window on this very narrow, very small. So that would be consistent with what you're saying. Some of the buckshot comes through, and that was buckshot that you shot with in the chest.
It was shot. We don't remember the exact size. Right. Buckshot is usually bigger, but
Okay, assume I'm not misleading you. Okay.
Right. Some shot.
Buckshot goes through and hits the back window.
Uh-huh.
That leaves holes in the window and hits in the door, the window frame, and goes out. One of them embeds in a tree back behind. So that is consistent with your findings, correct?
Yes.
That first shot. I'm sort of intrigued. Is there anything about the exterior of this shot? What's beveling? You know what a bevel is, beveling?
Yes, of course. Beveling is a pattern of defect through a bone. So when there's a gunshot wound that, for instance, goes through, let's say we get an entrance wound over here and an exit wound over here. We're talking about handgun wounds generally.
Right.
The way, when there's basically a hole in one side of the skull, I can tell which is an entrance and which is an exit, even without looking at the skin. Okay, so for instance, if I get skeletonized remains with a hole through the head, I can see which is the entrance and which is the exit because the bone bevels in a characteristic way depending on the direction of the bullet.
What is a bevel?
Yeah, bevel is like an angled chipping away of a hard surface.
So if a bullet goes through and I guess the head is that's good as all the bone, right?
Well, it's a solid bone.
Right. So you can tell this is the entrance because is it like?
It's the entrance on the outer table of the skull. It's a smaller hole. On the inner table of the skull, it's a bigger hole. So the bone is beveling outward as the bullet goes in.
So it would bevel in on the entrance and bevel out on the exit?
Well, bevel in, meaning sometimes people don't always use these words consistently, even forensic pathologists. But there is a inward beveling, but means it's kind of beveled outward. So,
bevel outward inside the wood, you see something that would indicate
wider. Yes, wider. It's wider on the inner table of the skull than the outer table.
And when it exits, do you have a narrower bevel, if you will, or defect on the inside than on the outside?
Yes.
That was a lot. Okay. So, was there, since this didn't enter bone, is there beveling with the flesh?
No, it doesn't bevel because there's too much elasticity and also just shredding. Frequently, we can't see beveling on long bones either. The skull is kind of a flat bone, so it has that characteristic.
Okay, and the second shot, as I understand it, you indicate is, can you adjust, well, first of all, so maybe we just forget about the feeding for just a minute, okay? So show the jury, please, where the initial, there's a shot, it's shot with a shotgun.
Yes.
And it is more than, since there's no stippling or soot or anything that would indicate a close shot, correct?
Correct.
So more than 3 or 4 feet away?
More than three, yes.
More than three. And where is the initial shot? Where does it hit?
On the top of the left shoulder.
When you say the top,
the apex.
Okay. Are there pellets in here?
Yes.
In the apex?
Yes.
And you indicated you thought his chin was bent to the...
Yeah, this is something that I believe, not necessarily have to be bent, but I do think it was at least tilted in this direction. The reason being, if this is in a horizontal direction and then goes through his cheek, let's say he's just your head up. Let's say it's just going through here and it would just kind of hit like over this side of his head. Okay. But meanwhile, it's kind of over here. So, and then it's the exit wound is back there. So at least we have a little bit of directionality like this. I don't know. If he was completely turned to the left, it would have gone through his face. But I think it makes the most sense knowing that a wound travels in a straight line, basically. Of course, these are pellets, so there's going to be a lot of destruction. But the fact that his face was spared from damage indicates to me that he had his head somewhat turned, I don't know exactly how much, but that it kind of coursed the top of the left shoulder into this left, neck, cheek area, and then exited the back of the head.
De Carpudlian reviews several images with Creighton Waters, and once the prosecutor consents, the defense attorney hands the photos to Dr. Reamer.
So I'd like you to look at these three photos and tell me if you can identify them.
Yes, these are x-rays that were taken at the commencement of the autopsy.
Okay, so this is his left arm, correct?
Yes.
And this material up here, we see these little dots. What is that?
Yeah, those are the shotgun pellets.
Okay, and they are, yeah, that's perfect. And so we see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Along that line, 20. Along these would be pellets that would be along here, correct?
Yes.
And they begin at, is this a shoulder? I mean, the shoulder bone?
Yes, it's the soft tissue of the shoulder.
Okay, I'll give you the point. Okay. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, this is the humeral head.
Show on Mr. Barber.
Yeah, this is the bone of the humerus. So our humerus is that long bone from the shoulder joint to the elbow joint, and we can see that this is basically, it's not really perforating the bone. There may be some defect at the edge of the bone, but it's pretty much on top in the soft tissues.
Okay, and it goes on for a ways, and then if you would show me exhibit number 112, okay, and would you focus on the upper right-hand corner, please? Now, that corresponds to this large picture, that orientation.
Yes.
Okay, so what is this showing us?
There are significant numbers of pellets also in like the left neck area.
Show us on Mr. Barber where that would be.
Yeah, so the entrance is here, and pellets are basically spreading, so there are pellets in the left side of the neck area over here, and then there's also some going into the brain.
Okay, and let me see if I can count those. So, I mean, are these part of what we looked at before?
Yes.
Okay. And how far down did the new one start?
It's a different view, so may not.
Okay. So, but a number of them.
Yeah. I mean, the purpose of the X-rays is basically to show what kind of ammunition is remains in the body, if any.
Did you remove these pellets?
Not every single one. A representative number.
With that, we bring to a close this episode of Jury Duty, the trial of Alex Murdoch. Please join us on our next installment as we continue our review of Dick Harpudlian's cross-examination of forensic pathologist Dr. Ellen Reamer. Also, check out the Ambie-nominated crime story podcast Night Raid, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you would like to listen to these episodes early and ad-free, head over to our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
You can find more information about this trial on our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page or at crimestory.com. Jury Duty is created and produced by Carrie Antholis. It was co-produced, written, and edited by yours truly, Chris Terracone. Music for this episode was provided by Strike Audio. Trial audio is courtesy of Law & Crime Networks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next episode of Jury Duty.